Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to talk to you about Generation Y today, but I think I've kind of led you astray because the topic should really be called Why You Can't Retain Generation Y. How do I know any of this anyway? Well, I only know it through talking to them. I've conducted a lot of large-scale studies with Australians across the board, talking about all areas of life, but we've had a few focuses on careers especially. So today I'm going to show you how youth is so much wasted on the young, and I guess what you can do, you know, what are the things that can be achieved in any case? It's not going to be my story, it's going to be the story of Generation Y that you'll see for yourself. And when you see them and hear them, what I encourage you to do, it's not the words, it's enthusiasm they express them with that tells us a lot about them. There's a sense of optimism across the board amongst young people, and the things we have to consider are the context, because every generation, they have similar values as you age, obviously. But then you've got to look at what are the circumstances of the time they've grown up in. What are their attitudes? What tools they've got to use? And where the economy is at. I did a group with really blue-collar blokes just 2 weeks ago in far western Sydney. And these are all blue-collar blokes. I'm talking about work. And their attitude was remarkable. You know, there's so much work out there. If you don't like your employer, just toss them and go to the next one. It's just so easy to do. And that's across the board. So let's begin our journey. What I'm going to do is give you some context into their lives, because the only way to understand these people is to understand what is the context of work in their life, and then we'll look at some specifics. Let's start. These people grew up in a competitive era that's unknown before. They're the ones who witnessed their parents being downsized, rationalized, really a lack of trust in society. If you think about the previous generation, there's a lot of areas of society you can trust. This is the first generation through exposure and media, etc., etc. They have no trust. There's no love lost. They figure, somebody's going to screw me. Well, I better screw them first. A job for life used to be the great Australian dream. You got a job, you're there 40 years later, you got a handshake, you achieved. For a Generation Y person, that's a loser proposition. It means you have not achieved what you're able to achieve.
In today's society, you haven't got that position of employment for that, you know, extent of time. So you're always trying to think of ways to improve yourself to cope with change in this kind of life, because no longer is your position guaranteed.
So if you're a boomer, chances are that everything was laid out for you. I mean, you finish school, you do a trade, a university, you get a job, you get married, a house. Well, none of those things are guaranteed anymore. And in fact, what career you're going to have really depends on what you're going to do about it yourself. The good news is that for Generation Y, they're so confident, so able, that for them it's actually a great thing, not a bad thing. Here's Charles Handy from the Hanley Institute, and here's how he describes what he tells his kids about getting a job.
I mean, I say to my kids, or I used to when they were still in college, I used to say to them, when you leave college, please don't look for a job. And they looked to me as if I was, you know, really crazy, asking them to go on welfare. I said, no, don't look for a job. Look for a customer, somebody who will pay you money to do something or make something.
And that's the ethos they completely believe in. What is it about me that can compete? What it gives me an edge that will make me different? And in fact, it's worse as you get younger. This is an ethos of the younger society. Parents' focus today is on raising their kids' self-esteem. That is the tool you really need to succeed in life. And when you talk to 10-year-olds, they'll tell you about the pressures of their lives, about a violin on Monday and sport on Tuesday, and how you can't fail. It's all about achievement. So for these people, that's what they were trained to do, to find and carve their own niches. There is a lack of trust out there. There is a sense that there's no sacred cow in society that you can trust wholeheartedly. Try and name a single institution. In fact, the only institution in Australian society that's trusted and that's untouchable is Anzac Day. And if you saw earlier this year when Sunrise and Kevin Rudd tried to play around with it, The country was scathing in its anger about it. Because apart from that, name an institution, think about one we could say wholeheartedly, they're good people. Yeah, they look after society. There's nothing to trust in. And they've learnt, think about The Simpsons, South Park, Family Guy. It's all about the irony of society and uncovering it.
First started a uni degree. I was working at the Commonwealth Bank. And my boss there, opened my eyes. Because, she was sort of, she'd look after herself before anyone else. And it made me realise that that's true. No one else is going to look after you unless you do it yourself.
A sense of relying on the organisation you work for your future, is a sense of being inadequate. Because there's no real belief that they've got your true interests at heart. Their fear being categorised. So you do a job well, then you've put them in the corner, keep doing that job for the next 40 years. Well, that's the fear. Is my skill base wide enough that I can hop? Because I've always got to keep my options open for the next thing. Because the truth is, I don't know what I want to do. And that's the case when you're 15, when you're 17, when you're 22, when you're 25, when you're 30, in some cases when you're 50. The good news is that these people are absolutely optimistic. They've got a sheer sense that they've got the ability to succeed and carve their path. And in fact, I predict that the next level of divide in society is not one about rich and poor so much. It's about the ability to compete or not to compete. Do you have the social self-esteem and ability to go out there and sell yourself and those who aren't able to? They've got a personal optimism about their future. And their future, and even now, it's not about working for a job and that's it. Work is part of society. And for a long time and still today, work is compartmentalised. They don't see this division. They've got all these passions and other things they want to do that they think are equally valid. And it's not something they want to hide in the workplace. They want it celebrated in the workplace. Google, which is not a perfect example because it is supposed to be a hip, you know, company. But every Friday, their employees get to do whatever they like on their own entrepreneurial projects. It is a recognition, not that, look, can I slip away early on Thursday because I'm doing some volunteer work with blah, 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 but rather, I'm leaving early on Thursday. And it's the capacity to say that and that the organisation doesn't tolerate it, but absolutely encourages it, understanding that people think holistically about their lives. I'll have a bit more to say about that in a minute.
I spent 3 days ago with my personal trainer with a massage course. I'm also doing marketing for my review show. I just love doing too many things at once, just to keep retraining. And I think, okay, well, I should really go back to the bank full time. And, you know, but I've been plodding along there part time over the past 3 years, and I love it. I love knowing I've got that flexibility a couple of days a week to do what I want to do.
Then to chase that lead and sometimes create my own projects. I think I see an opportunity and talk it up and we can get something happening. The things I actually feel uncomfortable with, and I can choose not to be involved with that. And that's really, really important for me.
Movies, making them, many of them. That's all I want to do. Build an empire for good. Just believing in yourself and like going, people can do anything they want, so why can't I?
Probably open a restaurant that's just being. And just work hard at it and earn some money and just open up a restaurant with someone else, a business partner.
There's no sense that they need you. In fact, the level of optimism that we're instilling in our kids goes to a ridiculous level. When you talk to teenagers, you know, it's interesting that you people think about Paris Hilton and you're, you know, disparaging and laughing at her. Teenagers admire her. She calls the shots. She runs her own show. She's doing it in areas that she loves. She's doing it her own way. And I guess they're thinking the same way. And they're encouraged to feel that. And I'll prove it to you. The Australian Idol auditions, there's tens of thousands of hopefuls lining up to go in there. And then they sing, and they can't. And nobody told them in the last 10, 15 years... You know, maybe there's something else that you'd be better at, you know, crocheting or... And then the judges obviously put them down and they're shocked. And we're instilling this self-esteem that is not realistic. I put it this way. Every young person believes they're above average, but only less than half of them can be. So what happens to the other half? And it is this sense of optimism that employers must capture and ride with and promote. Because if you discount it, there's an enormous disconnect. So the personal optimism across the board, it's blue collar, it's white collar, even the way they speak. 10 years ago compared to today, they're so articulate, they're so expressive and able. So what do they want to do? Well, one of their major ethos is about smart living. And I think there's a philosophy in smart living. It's about making your own way, using the tools to do so. And I've got to tell you, I think this is the first time in history that young people have something over adults, knowledge-wise, and that's in technology. You know, while you people kind of get a new thing and you're, geez, you know, they just want it, you know, because they understand it innately, it works for them. One of the areas is about shortcuts to success. Why would I do a whole 3-year degree when I can do a 3-month degree and get the same job at the end?
The more short courses around, quick diplomas, 3-month diplomas or something, instead of doing like a 3-year degree, you do 3 months in a thing and they guarantee you a job. And a lot of people are taking that up instead of doing like a uni course.
No, traditionally you think, well, hold on, you have to have the university. It's, well, no, you don't. It's just a different way of looking at it.
I mean, but like, my sister's doing the HSC this year and she's not going to go to uni at all because she's sort of a practical learner and she'll go to TAFE, and that's what TAFE offers you.
Every year there's Australian Young Hopefuls going on Big Brother and Australian Idol and blah, blah, blah. And the whole idea of going on it is the shortcut to success, because every year one or two of them are plucked from obscurity and land a permanent job. And the feeling is not only that could be me, but geez, that really could be me. And my question to you then is, how flexible is your definition of what a graduate is? Is it still somebody who's still 22 and just or 23 and just finished university? Or is it somebody who's been mucking around for a couple of years and did this and that and then went back to university and then 29 now? What is a graduate, I think, has to be expanded completely, and we have to get rid of this idea that fresh out of university is the answer, because people are making different decisions as they go along, of course.
A lot of people who work in IT and stuff, and they're trying to come up with some bright idea to suddenly make them really, really rich instead of having to work for it.
The role model, the guys who create ICQ and Google, you know, and do it in the garage and then sell it for $3 billion and that's the end of their life. But my point I'm conveying to you is that they really do believe that can be them. Realism does not set in until your late 20s. In your early... That's the reason that when you're in your early 20s, you move out of home for the first time. And then you can go and you can buy, spend $5,000 on a plasma TV and get the car on credit, because I'm going to be a millionaire by 30 anyway. I mean, you get to 27 and you go, hold on, I've got all this debt now. And they're always on the lookout for greater efficiencies and smarter ways of doing things. They're frustrated because their role in their new jobs is so low, they never get a say. And yet they feel that they've got so many ways of looking at it differently, scheming.
I think there might be something better out there. And in my case, there is, because there's so much demand for staff in financial planning that I can just keep going. I've gone to more money, to better opportunities each time. And it's just in my own interest. Like, it's pretty selfish, I guess.
It's pretty selfish, but what do I care? It's in my interest. Because you don't care about them. They don't think you care about them. You're a major corporation. If you're a small company, that's different. But other than that, you're a big bastard, basically. Would you not downshift me if you decided to? If some guy upstairs says 10% cut, would I not be out the door? Well, that's the reciprocation they're giving you. It's just reality. There's nothing much in it.
Net.com. I actually discovered this the other day. What you do is you're able to order sort of cosmetics and men's and women's fragrances and skincare products at very cheap prices compared to Australian retail prices, and it's free shipping.
Very clever. So eBay. You know, the couple of thousand Australians who live off eBay. There's a hell of a lot of young people who do it on the side. Here's a little clever thing that just came out of one focus group we did.
If
by my mum and trashing magazines every week for her. I actually sell them on eBay when she's done with them because Americans buy them. As long as they're in good condition, I don't know what it is. They love them. They'll pay like $10-11 US for them, and I've only paid like $4 at the newsstand. I'm a recycler. I buy crap and I sell it for a little bit more, and that's how I'm going to make money on this.
Every one of your employees has 80% of their focus on the job, but at the back of their head, they're constantly thinking of ideas and things. Now, again, I raise the question, should those ideas remain in secret and something I do after work, or is there not a way of actually incorporating and supporting and building and recognising, hold on, there's lots of parts to you. You've heard of the gap year. I think we should talk about the gap decade. Look, this is a global generation. You know, overseas travel, you know, used to be, ooh, ah. It's just nothing. It's just every day. Teenagers go to Europe, America. It's just a norm. It's the expectation to go overseas and do something different. And the gap year has become a gap decade. The ethos is from the age of 18 to the age of 27, 28, it's about playing around and experiencing everything life has to offer. What I want is to fill my CV up with amazing experiences. If I haven't done that, I've failed. If I get to my late 20s, to my 30s, 40s, and I look back and say, all right, I was just in a job. So put this in mind. There's one guy and he says, oh yeah, I did this trekking in Guatemala and I did voluntary work and I did a degree in Russia and then I've been working at the same job for 15 years. Now, the two don't match up, you know, it's all about experiences. And all the things, at this age, they're not thinking long term at all. That's why you can't retain them, because they're not thinking long term. They're thinking next year, the year after. That's about it. Their saving goals are very long term. Mortgage doesn't count. That's later. Yeah, we'll have a house. That's later. Marriage? Yeah, we want to get married and have kids. That's later. That's in the 30s. A home? A career? Well, you know, I'm just building it now. Nothing is settled. In fact, the more settled things are, the worse they are. Now, this is not every single person, but I'm talking about a bulk ethos of young people and how they see it. They want to have lots and lots of experiences. Most of them tend to be selfish. They're building, yes, I'll volunteer in Guatemala, but yeah, I can put that on CV, you know. If I'm a lawyer, yeah, I'm going to do this human rights thing. Yeah, but that looks good on my CV as well. And it's a combination of getting these little courses and little things. Why not do a 1 year over there, 3 months over there? Little things are built to give you an option to grow where you want to go. You, of course, have overseas connections and things. I think those have to be guarantees, you know. A new young generation, why, you know, you stay with us for 2 years. Yeah, you can go to any one of these 55 countries and absolutely you can do a transfer there, et cetera, et cetera. It's not special, it just is. Because that is what they're going to do anyway. So we're building sister relationship with lots of these companies. Listen to their attitude. They're very clear about it.
And like I choose to save up for a house and I'll go overseas holiday every year. I choose the overseas holiday. You have a mortgage and you are in a house, it is so expensive. There are so many things that you don't even factor into that you have to pay for. And so, you know, if you're going to buy a house, you're going to like it. You're going to spend a lot of time in it. You won't be going out.
I mean, saving mortgage, I mean, it is really boring, isn't it?
We're more interested in also some of the things that young people want to have, so they're getting out there and spending more money on flashy cars or more material individual things as opposed to getting married and getting mortgages and stuff.
You know, these are the people who will complain to you, you know, I hate banks because they charge me $2 every time I go to the other ATM. And then you say, well, why don't you cross the road and use your one? I couldn't be bothered.
Have fun, like, you know, what's the point of kind of getting a mortgage and then having to worry about that, which means you can't go out drinking like 3 nights a week like we do with basketball and different stuff, yeah, rather than being locked into something.
Any offerings that you've got that are long term will help you with mortgages, will help you with this. They don't care about that, really, because what it does is restrict them. You've got to think short term because they're thinking short term.
I'm travelling, yeah, as you put it. I've got to admit, when I came home, I did spend a lot of money, but I was happy.
You see, travelling is not lazing on the beach in Goa, although that might be part of it. It's building your experience of CVs, and that's why it's investment. It's worth going to debt for. So what do? Well, they kind of stay at home, well, for far too long, according to their parents, They go and do a bit of university, a bit of work, a bit of travel, this and that, come back, move out, move back into home, go overseas. That's what it is, and all you're doing is saving for the next trip, the next purchase, the next thing. There's nothing permanent about it. I do want to say something that there is that short-termness about them, and I think companies have to think in those short-term goals. Within 3 months, I mean, your frustration is, of course, that you hire somebody in their 20s and then 2 weeks later they go, okay, I've done this job, what's next? Where's the promotion? What's next? And that's how they think. It's not about, hold on, I did this for 3 years before I... Why would you do that? That's ridiculous. And you have to think in those terms because that's how they... No, they might not be realistic, but that's where they're at in life. Here's an example of this idea of immediacy. That's a parallel. Here's a bloke who went to McDonald's.
I went to Macca's and I ordered a burger and it didn't come straight away. And I was like, what are you doing? This is supposed to be fast food. And I was there for about 3 minutes.
Here's my message to you. Don't hire Generation Y. Hire people in their late 20s when they've passed that stage. Let them waste that somewhere else. When they get to the late 20s, something interesting happens. And they're in Gen X at this point. Because by 30, you want to achieve some goals. You want the career by 30. You want to know what you're up to. You want the partner by 30. Because you want to have kids by 32, 33, so you need the part, etc., etc. The mortgage, well, that's become deferred. I used to want that at 30, but you know what? I could. I don't know if I say for 3 years I could get there, but you know what? A few years more won't worry me, really. So it's at this point of time where they're thinking long term. They're partnered up. They're getting the home. They're thinking about the future. They've settled down. They've done all of that. And now they're thinking about the future. This is a perfect time to attract somebody. And that's why I ask, why do we define a graduate as somebody who's 22? Why not get somebody who's 27, 28, 29, who you know will stay with you, because they're a lot more serious at this point. And here you can offer them all the things for the future. Discount mortgage when you're with us or whatever, which banks used to offer. Or the children's education fund that we put in now. And this is the right time to attract them. Because 30 is a turning point. In fact, it's a third life crisis, you know, because you kind of go, well, by 30 I need this and this and this. And you go, hold on, I'm 27. Oh, math doesn't add up quite. I may not get there.
I think more about the future now than when I was younger. Like, maybe not so much dreams, but realistic goals of what I want to achieve by a certain age and where I vision myself to be, maybe when I'm 40 or something like that. Now I focus on what I wanted to be and what I need to do to get there.
In my early 20s, I had money and I would spend it on travel, but now my priorities have totally changed and I'm saving money to buy a house. So I'm sort of looking at long-term investment type things rather than just the quick enjoyment factors of travelling.
Better still, hire baby boomers. They make the best employees. Nobody wants to hire them. They're looking for work. You know, they don't go off and get pregnant, except for in France. They won't go travelling, they're not going to want the next step. They're going to be there for a good 10, 15 years. And I tell you what, they make pretty good employees because they've got no egos. What is the universal dream then? The universal dream is about a flexibility. Really, it's the ethos. This is the universal Australian dream. We call it working without chains. It's about working it from home or the office, wherever you like, being able to sit on the beach, connected through the computer, all that illusion that doesn't work, that's what they dream of actually doing. Setting up on their own, being their own boss and doing it. And I'll tell you something fascinating about the people who have. The people who've gone out on their own and done it, and everyone dreams of it, they make less money than their colleagues, they work much harder than their colleagues, but they'd never go back to working for somebody again. Although this guy has, but he does represent, in those days, the universal dream, being able to work naked.
No one knows when I'm sitting here relaxed. I could be talking to the chief executive, I could be talking to a national sales manager, a marketing manager, a human resource director, and at the other end of it, they think that I'm sitting here in a suit in an office. Why do I need to be?
Oh, right. Oh, okay. New Zealand, North America, Western Australia. New South Wales and Victoria.
So are we producing something for the franchisee?
What?
You know, there's a variety of things that have bugged me for years about offices, and I know, I worked in offices for 15 years. Everyone is trying to see how hard you work or how hard you don't work without looking at productivity. There's politics. The politics of an office are very much ego-driven. It's all about who has to climb over whoever to get to wherever they're going. It doesn't happen like that at home. An office is very regimented and it's very routine. You've got to go here on this time. You have to make excuses if you're sick. You have to feel bad if you've taken a sick day when you weren't really sick and you're going to work. I mean, the whole thing just doesn't match. And the other side of it is that it's big overheads. Why do we need offices? I've got two offices. I've got an office that I work out of home, which is part of it you can see now, which is in a lovely position down at Tamarama. So I overlook my surf spot, my swimming hole, and I spend a lot of time in there in creative time. And then I have an office in McClarence Point, so when I need the corporate look, when I need the feel, I'm over in the office in McMahon's Point.
At the end of the day,
so I'm just sort of,
Tony's not going to be up for about 12,000, 13,000.
Yeah, but it's the reason I get the two is so that I know that it's one, you know, that it's honest.
You have to show Dave, Tony both those.
Yeah, and then he'll at least think, God, I'll go with the 11.
We live in a 1.5 bedroom apartment. It's not a big apartment. It's reasonably spacious. We have set up an office and a half sunroom, so to speak, but that's fully equipped with computer facilities, printer, laser printer, storage facilities for our stationery and filing cabinets for all the client information. And we have every facility that a major office has. We can fax direct off the computer, we've got email, we've got, you name it, we're connected to the world from this small apartment, yet very efficient. Freedom. The fact that you can work naked, or you can work half clothed, or you can work unshaven. You can work as you feel you are. You don't have any of the external pressures that an office offers you. If I've done an hour, 2 hours of work in the morning, in my mind, or with distributors, or with clients direct, the exhilaration of feeling of getting out and going for a surf or a swim, having freedom at midday. Every day I go out and I never take it for granted. I'm off for a swim, and how many people have this time, at this time, during the week, to do this? I have the freedom to do this. I can believe that the rest of the world is sitting in an office while I'm out here. My partner and I have our board meetings on boards. That's where we do our thinking, that's where we do our strategic, and that's where we come up with the ideas, and that's why we're reasonably relaxed.
You'll be happy to know that he sold out to a bigger company and he does 120 hours a week now. So. But the point is about flexibility, and I'll give you one example that somebody mentioned to me. You know, they said every company has compassionate leave. Somebody dies, tragedy. He said, what about passionate leave? What about there's something ecstatic happening in your life and you want to celebrate that? Is that okay? And what I'm saying is we've got to break down those barriers that separate different aspects of your life because that's how they see it. So how do you retain Generation Y after all of that? Well, I'll tell you a few things you can think about. One is to redefine graduate. Hire older and you get your return much better than you will if you hire younger. As I said, target ethnic people, you know, like there's a really, if you come from an ethnic background, especially if you come from Asia and there's a whole lot of education, there's a lot less of this frivolous thinking and short-term planning. There is a lot more long-term planning because the ethos of education is there. Hire nerds. Look, there's a proportion of the population that does want to stay in the job for 25 years from the time they started. But overall, combined attitude. The one thing these people despise is hypocrisy. That is why they love South Park and The Simpsons, because it lays bare all of society's hypocrisies and make fun of them. And look inside. Are those statements, you know, the mission statements of the organization, you know, to fulfill the very big, I mean, do you actually do those things, or is it just talk? And they can see straight through that, absolutely. And they really do get very frustrated by it. Loyalty is dead, but pride is not. We ask them to, in one case, here's a camera, disposable camera. Take a photo of the one bit of your job that you love. These are people 20, 21. The most common photographs we got back were of cupboards and storerooms. And I said, why? That's what I'm responsible for. That's my area of responsibility. And it really is about what is it that you can give them as responsibility. They're very loyal to their team. They're incredibly loyal to the team they're on and the job they're doing. They're not lazy by any means. They work bloody hard. But it's not for the organization. It's for the exact team that they're working for. So give them responsibility. Really, think about it differently, differing from when you did. Give them additional responsibilities. Make them feel that valuable. And empower middle managers. I did a whole project looking at the difference between middle managers and high-level managers. Now, the guys in the office upstairs in the corner who had to go through all this crap to get to where they are, well, they're in a different ethos from Generation Y. Middle manager said to me this, you know, my team did pretty well. I wanted to shout them just a barbecue, a sausage sizzle on the roof of the building. He had to go through 8 memos and 4 superior officers to do it and get the funding. And then he said, you know what, it's too hard, I'm not going to do it. Empower the middle managers to carve their path with their employees. You're only a step to somewhere else. You're not there for the future. You're not there forever. They only see you as a step to somewhere else, and treat yourself that way. To be disappointed that people leave you and don't give you the loyalty, well, it's just like it's unnecessary. Think laterally in your offering. What else can you offer them? What other opportunities, possibilities, educational courses, etc., can you offer them? And maybe it's off left field. It doesn't have to be direct. You know, Unilever have this thing where they sent their staff up to the Northern Territory to work with Indigenous communities once a year. I mean, these are things that really, what an amazing, empowering experience. Think laterally about all your offerings. Offer international sister programs and make that a standard part of your job. Sure, there's no problem. You go overseas, they come here, etc., etc. It's just part and parcel of it. Offer mentorship. Mentorship is enormous. Really, it is enormous. Look, but the word's been bandied around for way too long and in a pretty useless way. Mentorship, I mean real mentorship, not just, look, here's our program. True mentorship, connect people in a very personal level, because these people, they want to learn from people who've done it. Their biggest question is, how did they do it? They're so curious about these things. How did other people manage to carve their path? What is needed in order to do it? Think short term. Offer target, short term rewards. Short-term courses and skilling, think short-term. Even if it's a week diploma here, if it's a St. John's ambulance certificate here, I mean, these are things that build your CVs and build your experiences. Offer them short-term. Think short-term in terms of your rewards and experiences. Think holistically. Nurture their passions. Don't just tolerate their life outside work. Encourage it and absorb it as much as you can. It shouldn't be a hidden part. It should be a celebrated part. Remove the glass wall. I mean, this is a biggie, you know. In Australia, but companies in Australia are way behind where people are at is this. The glass wall is where the glass ceiling used to be, you know. The glass ceiling is gone. Every young woman believes she could be top if she wanted to. But the glass wall is the one where she comes to work and I've got to pretend I don't have a family or kids, you know. I've got to close the door and pretend. But hold on, I've got all these things in my mind and that's really important. So why should I? Why should I have to hide the two? This is such a big issue. And I say, society is way ahead of you on this one, way ahead of all the organisations, and dads as well. I'd ask you in the law firms here, you know, if you're a senior partner comes along and says, you know, I'm going to leave on Tuesday at 3 because I'm doing tuck shop. Is it, look, I've got to leave at 3, or is it, I've got to leave at 3 because I'm doing tuck shop? Now, that's the standard that we've got to work towards, because that is the expectation. Look, we're in a society now where we're reevaluating what's important, really. Every family is thinking about downshifting. Every family is thinking, we need more time together. We need all these material things, but we need time together. And dads have changed enormously. I mean, they're reveling in being in the dad role that they've absorbed. But organizations, they don't recognize women's needs enough. and certainly not men's needs. And the point is not so much what you offer, but what is the attitude behind it? Is it absolutely permissible and acceptable and rewarded, or is it something that I have to hide? Is it a glass wall? But finally, more than anything else of all that stuff, and I guess this applies across the board, it's always the little things that count. It's not the formal interview after 6 months or after 1 year. It's not the sitting down and looking at those, I forget what the acronyms are for the various, you know, how successful you've been, have you met your targets, blah, blah, blah. It's the little cups of coffee. It's a little chat here and there. It's a little pat on the back. Because as much as these people are so optimistic on the outside, I mean, inside we know there's emotional crumbling from a lot of people. Everyone's uncertain, everyone, you know, but outside, look at the Big Brother house, you know, everyone's confident, but inside they're crumbling, you know. And it's the little things that everyone needs to be reinforced with. And I'll give you this analogy to it. You know, people who fly business class or first class, I mean, I wouldn't know. But people who fly business or first class, you know what they talk about? That little bag they get and what's in it, you know, ooh, lip gloss, ooh. They've just spent $10,000 and it's always the little things that count. And I'll leave you with this guy who'll give you that thought. Here is how what they did when they achieved $1 billion or whatever it was in their financial.
Yesterday was a really special moment because we reached a couple of our goals, which I weren't aware of those goals. It was like a billion in turnover on FX Online and 100 million revenue or something. We got free pies and sandwiches and stuff, a bit like this, and that really makes me happy.
Thank you, everyone.